This is Toronto Today with Greg Brady.
Toronto's news, today's talk.
640 Toronto.
Pierre Poilievre won't meet with David Johnston, and he's taking some criticism. Leaders will. I think there's things clearly. Justin Trudeau, Jagmeet Singh, Pierre Poilievre will get criticized for just because of the role they're in. There's very specific criticism. Hey, you should have been quicker on this policy. Hey, I'm not sure you're telling the truth on this one. But I find it really hard to knock Poilievre for this. If, by the way, if he has personal knowledge of interference with elections in 2019 or 2021, circa, you know, a Michael Chong, and remember, he didn't run as leader in those elections. Andrew Scheer did in 2019. Aaron O'Toole did in 2021. He was, I won't call it him a lowly MP, but he was an MP and one of influence for sure. But I also think that he doesn't have any personal knowledge. I think we'd have known about it by now, either from his own lips or somehow, drip, drip, it would have leaked out. But it made no sense to meet with David Johnston, also because he does not think David Johnston is coming at this from an objective sense here. Mr. Johnston is a ski buddy, cottage neighbor, family friend of the prime minister. That's from one of Poilievre's team denoting that. That's director of media relations Sebastian Skamski, who is quoted in a story on CBC's website. Johnston also was with the Pierre Elliott Trudeau Foundation. Let's remind you of this. Again, we can't talk about this every day. We can't keep, you know, pound, 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 fist, fist, fist on this story every single day, because you care about other issues besides this. You're going to care a lot next week when the report comes out. It will dwarf everything else. It's going to push a lot of stuff. Mississauga Brampton, it's going to push that off the front page. The Toronto mayoral race, it's going to push that off the front page for a period of time. But yeah, the concept right away is, why would David Johnston do this? A well-regarded governor general, a well-regarded, objective Canadian, that's the big job of governor general. Don't play party politics. Don't shill for anybody else. And be friends with who you want to. Go where you want, when you want, with whomever you want. But then you can't circle back around, take some decent money. It's like a $3,500 per diem per day for David Johnston doing this work over the span of about 6 weeks. Good cash if you can get it. And then you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. Either you'll be considered by the Trudeau backers a really disloyal person. Oh, you sold your pal out. What would Dad think? That will come up. Or you'll be seen as, well, he wasn't able to be independent. He wasn't able to be objective. He wasn't able to dig into this as fully as he would have liked to, because then what will people say at the cottage or when you're skiing with this particular person? Here's Warren Kinsella on this issue, and I think he kind of nails some of the criticism and some of the validity and exactly why Pierre Poilievre can't sit down with David Johnston at this point in time.
Seriously, you have been a key member of the Trudeau Foundation, which received hundreds of thousands of dollars in Chinese graft, and which literally bears the surname of the man who has pulled you into the muck where he spends most of his time. Why? Why did you do that? All that you needed to say is this: Justin, you rule like you ski, recklessly. I obviously cannot be your independent rapporteur in this stinking China mess. One, because we took money from China, and two, because I'm too close to you and your family.
Yeah, that's exactly it right there. You could have chosen anybody. Maybe the requirement, top of the list. You know how I brought this up with Bonnie Crombie yesterday? You have a yellow notepad. You actually use a pen and paper, and you write down reasons to do something and reasons to not. For David Johnston, right away, family friend, top of the list. For Justin Trudeau, your top of the list should be not a family friend. That's what you're looking for with a special rapporteur, is not a family friend at this particular point in time. I want to shift to this. I saw this in on globalnews.ca, and I saw this is happening in Nanaimo, BC. Everybody familiar with the Nanaimo, BC? It's not the size of Vancouver, but, you know, it's BC. And it's one of those situations where a smallish town, 91,000 people. So maybe you live in a place that's around 91,000 people. They're going to rethink, as is the premier, David Eby, NDP premier, no less. They're going to look at whether they've got this right regarding open drug use. I know there was a big debate. Pierre Poilievre was involved in it with Carolyn Bennett in the House of Commons 2 days ago. Here's what the city of Nanaimo is considering. It's looking at basically, they've had a 3-year experiment so far with decriminalization of possession of small quantities of illicit drugs. But Nanaimo City Council decided they want to look at regulating this tighter. Nobody wants to see people thrown in jail for their addictions. I think we're past that. But similarly, if I'm going to say that and you're going to nod your head and go, no, I don't want anybody who's using cocaine or meth or who's right out of, you know, season 2, episode 4 of Breaking Bad. I don't want them going to prison for this. You can also say, well, I don't want them at the bus stop smoking it up while my 15-year-old is taking a bus to go to grade 10 today. Doesn't matter, boy or girl. I have a friend that has this very same experience. Their kid takes the bus to school. They're pretty ticked off, like middle grade school kid, waiting at a bus stop to get to school. Guy with crack pipe on a regular basis, smoking in a bus stop, in a shelter, you know, when the weather's not great, right beside that kid. So you can't say, hey, I don't want these people thrown in jail. I want to help them with their treatment and help them with their addiction, and then be okay on the other side. We're going to wonder someday, like we have with a lot of political fights. Let me use gay marriage, for example. Who gives a rip? Well, this is something we will wonder. How did we get politically split on, should a 15-year-old be at a bus stop and have some dude absolutely wailing away on a crack pipe right next to them? Like, we'll actually wonder why in 20 years into the 21st century, we had this conversation. I want you to hear Nanaimo's mayor here describe exactly what they need to consider doing. His name is Leonard Krog.
There is great concern expressed by parents in particular, let alone tourists, business operators, who are seeing open drug use on the streets, every place someone can sit down, every nook and cranny.
I want you to think about that. Every place you sit down, park bench, waiting for a bus, meeting a friend here and there, there's the odds someone could sit down and start using illicit drugs in front of you. We're not even ready to have beer in public parks, and yet we're doing nothing about open hard drug use. I want you to think about that. And someone might say, well, you're only saying that because you're a parent. You're right, I am. You're right, I am. And I will not shut up because I'm a parent. In fact, parents are going to get louder. We didn't do enough the last 3 years, okay? So we're going to do something maybe the next 3 or 4 or 5 years about this stuff anyway.
This is Toronto Today with Greg Brady.
Toronto's news, today's talk.
640 Toronto.
All right, only one of the three of us, Greg Brady, Sheba Siddiqui, Gordon Rennie, Dave Bradley, only one of us has read Spare all the way through, Harry's autobiography. Only one person read it in the first 2 days it was released. Only one person opened the door and, you know, the Amazon driver dropped it off. Or did you actually go and buy the copy at the bookstore? Did you go
to actually a gift. It was given to me as a gift from my husband.
Well, he knows exactly who you are and what you like. And only one of us has made it through more than 2 episodes of the rather self-aggrandizing Harry and Meghan Netflix documentary. I couldn't do it. I couldn't get to the 3rd episode.
Then again, what if it was Will and Kate? Would you have watched it? Yes,
oh,
you would.
So
you
much so.
Straight through.
Yeah, because those are good kids. They're sweet.
Okay.
They're exactly what sons and daughter-in-laws should be.
Wow.
What happened yesterday? So Harry and Meghan, we found out after the show, damn it. So we're coming to it late. We're probably the last show on 640 that gets to talk about it because of the timing of it. What do you think happened here?
Okay. For anybody who doesn't know, Meghan and Harry and her mother, Joya, were in New York City because Meghan was accepting an award from the Miss Foundation Women of Vision Award. This is from a friend of hers, a political activist. They were recognizing her public work. And this is her first appearance since the coronation, public appearance.
Mm-hmm.
So they got all dressed up. She looks gorgeous. She's wearing a gold dress. I'm sure you've seen pictures of it, Greg.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, right?
Sure.
She looks very attractive. He looks nice in a nice suit. And as they were leaving, the three of them, their SUV was, they claim there was a 2-hour chase around New York City, that was very aggressive, almost violent, almost near, several accidents, several, you know, police officers might've been hit.
A lot of almost,
pedestrians. Yes, there were a lot of almost, but I mean, many news outlets do confirm. So that this is on FDR Highway. I don't know how well you know New York City. But FDR Drive, sorry, it is a highway on the east side of Manhattan, and it's about 15 kilometers. So, and actually, it's one of the few places, depending on the time, there isn't a lot of traffic. People do fly, like Uber drivers, taxi drivers. That's what they take if they need to, you know, take someone from one end to the other end of Manhattan. So it started there. They were in their car, and then halfway through, and they were being chased by paparazzi, going 80 miles per hour. How many kilometers is that? What is that?
That's about 138.
Oh, whoa, that's very specific. Okay.
Well, I think it's 1.6 K for every mile. So I'm 128 exactly, as a matter of fact.
Okay. So that's what happened. So at one point, they jumped out of their car that they were in, the SUV, and they got into a cab.
Right.
Which I think this is your favorite part, because then they ended up interviewing the cab driver as well.
Sukhcham Singh got very popular yesterday. He's the most popular in New York City. He's not even an Uber or Lyft driver. He's an actual New York City licensed cab driver. Yeah, big yellow SUV he's got going. Yeah.
And what happened was, and he says that, you know, it wasn't that bad. It wasn't really a chase. I wouldn't call it a chase. But what happened was, when they got out of their SUV and jumped into the cab, the police officers that were with them went one way to sort of outwit the paparazzi, mm-hmm. and then the cab went the other way.
Yeah, I'm reading this. The cabbie said six paparazzi surrounded his vehicle when they were stuck behind a garbage truck. Because in New York, they do collect garbage at night. It's an interesting concept. And that his vehicle was tailed by two cars. But his quote, "I never felt like I was in danger. It wasn't like a car chase in a movie. They were quiet and seemed scared, but it's New York. It's safe." I think something happened. But I think on the 10, everything happened, and this was this two-hour harrowing incident, and zero, nothing happened. I think this might be a 4.5. I think it's...
Oh, it, goodness.
Well,
okay,
why don't you attach a number to it, since I'm courageous?
I think, 8?
Okay. Is it a 9?
No, I wouldn't go that high. Okay. I will say, though, I think that when they're in the SUV, they were being chased, because they're worth a lot of money. Getting that money shot of them,
you're
set, especially if you're British press, you're set. That picture is worth a lot of money. So, of course, they're going to try to do almost anything and everything. However, we know what happened in 1997. We know why Prince Harry would make such a big deal of this car chase. So I can imagine that it's always going to affect him, anything to do with a car accident, because he was 12 years old when his mother passed away in such a gruesome manner.
It's got to be really bothersome to him. And this would happen to me more in New York than it would in Los Angeles. Clearly it would. I would never, ever dispute that. Can we agree there wasn't a 2 hour chase? Like there might have been. I find it hard to believe they even spent 2 hours in an actual vehicle in New York City. How far were they going? I just don't think you can get stuck for that long.
I don't have answers to these questions. But sources are saying that there were a half dozen blacked out vehicles. The paparazzi, there were a half dozen blacked out vehicles. They were citing traffic violations, driving on the sidewalk, running red lights, driving the wrong way on a one way street. I believe that. I believe that that picture is worth so much money that they would do that.
Let's do the Eric Adams clip. This is New York City Mayor Eric Adams and him noting it's kind of difficult to believe that there was a two-hour chase.
I would find it hard to believe that there was a two-hour high-speed chase. That would be, I find it hard to believe. But if it's 10 minutes, a 10-minute chase is extremely dangerous in New York City. Any type of high-speed chase that involves something of that nature is inappropriate.
Inappropriate. I don't doubt. Yeah. Harrowing. If the SUV got up to 80 miles per hour, as you said, close to like 130K, that's not nothing. Driving through New York City. I've never had the courage to drive through New York City. I've driven in LA. I've driven in Chicago.
Me neither.
I've never been behind the wheel in Manhattan. You get in a cab,
but I know
and it feels
it very
like a,
well. It's my favorite city in the world after Toronto, and I know it very well. And I can see how. Okay, well, I don't think it was a two-hour chase, but I do think that they were being chased.
Absolutely, I do. Why couldn't this have happened here? Why couldn't that be Mayor Deputy Mayor Jennifer McKelvey? Why couldn't we have counselors? Why couldn't this be an election issue?
They're never coming back here unless they're saying they might pop into the Mulroney's for like a weekend sleepover.
Okay.
And then,
And she ripped the Toronto Police Services. She was like, there was a guy with a camera in my backyard, and TPS says, what do you want us to do about it?
Imagine someone's filming you swimming naked in your pool, Brady, and then the police don't do anything.
Yeah, that's only between 11 p.m. and 1 a.m. on Wednesdays after I coach baseball.
This is Toronto Today with Greg Brady.
Toronto's news, today's talk.
640 Toronto.
Anthony Fury, he's looking for your vote for mayor of Toronto on June 26th. I mentioned that Daily Bread Food Bank. If you tackled that protester, you'd be polling really anybody who tackles that protester goes up an extra 15%.
Absolutely.
People, you don't, nobody wants to be scared by somebody coming up and shouting behind them. Everybody just, and Josh Matlow was the only person to protect the curtain. I feel like you would have been a curtain protector. That curtain almost came down on everybody.
More than that, I'm going to protect the whole city. Cause well, Greg, you know, I announced the other day that, as mayor, I will be hiring 500 more police officers, and we're going to ramp up the visible police presence, because so many cops that I speak to, they say, remember this thing, Beat Cop, that used to exist? It wasn't just for the movies. It wasn't just in TV. It was a real thing. Mm-hmm. Police officers patrolling our communities, and we got to get back to that. They want to get back to that, because, Greg, I think people want a reassurance of a visible police presence, because right now you hear about 911 not being answered. You hear calls are just not, people aren't getting to it, and it's a manpower issue. Ultimately, this is cause and effect, Greg. Because my 500 headcount, by the way, that's not some radical number. All that does is bring us back to the number that we were at 10 years ago.
So as a for total me, or as a ratio of the people in Toronto?
Oh, Greg, as a total.
As a total.
It just brings us back. So to your point, the city of Toronto has grown, and yet we have fewer police officers than we did 10 years ago. So what we're seeing right now, this is just basic cause and effect. We failed to bring more officers into the headcount, and this is what's going on. So we need more patrols in downtown. You know, the Jewish community, they actually pay for private security patrols up in North Bathurst. And I think, look, these folks paying their taxes just like anyone else. I don't think that's fair.
For what?
Well, the whole strip, because there are people who are going and throwing bricks at synagogues with impunity, and that should be the job of a beat cop. And Toronto police agree. They want to be able to have that visible presence on public transit as well, Greg.
You see that scenario Friday night at Yonge and Dundas Square, and I see two women fighting over what we don't know, and I see security guards who won't intercede. I'm like, what is this? Is this the TDSB? And then it takes half an hour for police to show at Yonge and Dundas Square. A police call takes half an hour. That square should have a cop there 24/7, at least one. I don't know what, I always assumed that they would.
Greg, this campaign is about priorities. And my commitment to the people of Toronto is that police officers, that's a priority. Yes, respecting your tax dollars, that's a priority. More drug injection sites like the city's planning to bring in, that is not a priority. And I'm going to phase them out. I'm going to put treatment centers in place instead to get these folks off of drugs and to clean up the decay that we are seeing on our subway systems all throughout our neighborhoods. It's about respecting voices who have been forgotten. The folks of Etobicoke, Scarborough, North York, they're being forgotten again at decisions at City Hall, and that's not right.
I mentioned Nanaimo, BC. Councillors are going to explore public drug use restrictions. Even the Premier, David Eby, says we've got to start looking at this in a little more balanced fashion. John Horgan was not a fan of doing so. David Eby, I should say, is looking into that. And I got a message from a friend of mine who said, we hadn't texted in a couple months, but he said, I dropped my 15-year-old off to get the school bus. This is in Durham Region every day. And there's open, like, I mean, crack smoking on the way to school. It's a 15-year-old boy. Maybe people would be more sensitive if I said it was a 15-year-old girl, but it is a boy. But parents should never have to apologize for saying, I kind of don't want my son at a bus stop with someone visibly smoking hard drugs next to him. I don't. And we shouldn't. And we can't.
And yet the vocal activists want them to apologize. And I can promise you,
they
Greg,
do. I agree with that.
As mayor of Toronto, I'm willing to take the heat to do what's right and to stand up for Toronto families. I don't care if 100 people on Twitter say mean things about me or folks show up with rude words on a banner in front of City Hall about me. If I know I'm standing up for 80, 90% of people, of voters who want this stuff done, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make the tough decisions. Phasing out drug injection sites, it's a tough decision. I'm the guy to do it. And we got to help this is no way to live your life too, these folks involved in the drug crisis. I've been getting a lot of support and calls from parents whose kids are tragically on the street dealing with these issues. They don't want the status quo to continue, yet every other candidate out there running against me feels like they should be continuing with this status quo. It's not on.
Yeah, the status quo is not compassionate. The status quo is not, having a level of understanding that they can keep going back and forth. Like parents, every parent, if that's your son or daughter out there, would want some sort of, you know, pardon the phrase, car crash moment to intercede, and they get arrested. They lose, they get kicked out and get evicted. Something dramatic to happen. They'll even losing a boyfriend or girlfriend. Something dramatic to happen to give that reality check. Because there's no reality check right now. It's these are safe havens for people with terrible addiction problems. And we want to help them, not hurt them. We want the compassion is treatment. The compassion isn't leaving them out there to die on the street or sleep on a sleeping bag in January. It's not.
You got it. And you know what? Coming up at 11 a.m., I have a press conference, Greg, where I'm going to be announcing, just to tease it for a bit to you.
Tease it all.
We have to make sure that parks are places where families can enjoy, communities can enjoy them. I know what it's like as a parent to push the kids in a stroller, scan the park for needles, to find them at the playground and say, sorry, kids, we got to move on. And that's not right. We reclaimed Trinity Bellwoods Park, which is great, but Allen Gardens remains a mess. And there are more families who are living in different condos and apartment buildings. There are camps now in parks all around Toronto that are proliferating, and we can't allow that to happen. And I'll be giving you the solution to that at 11 a.m. Okay. Mayor Fury will not allow our parks to be lost for yet another summer. We got the long weekend upon us. People are going to be having a great time at the parks all across the city. Huge, beautiful parks in Scarborough, Etobicoke. We got to make sure these are for families, these parks.
I need an answer on this. What does the province need to do here? Because some of treatment, some of the concept of quote-unquote institutionalization has just changed. It disappeared towards the end of the Ernie Eves years, all through the 15 Liberal years. But to be honest, there's been no sign of it through 5 years of the Ford government of a return to put somebody, if somebody can't be in your home as a relative or a close friend, it's a home or the street, and there's no middle ground. And there was a middle that saved these people before. What do you need the province to do? They're not doing enough.
I'm looking forward to partnering with the province, Greg, to bring in more involuntary treatment options. And the BC Premier's talking about it. New York City Mayor Eric Adams is doing it. And what that means is that when there is a person who presents to police or to the health system who is clearly an imminent danger to themselves or others. And you know what I mean. You see that person walking down the street and you go, that guy's going to take a swing at someone in the next 60 seconds. I just know it. That person is a prime candidate to be taken off the streets, getting the help that they need, and then that helps our families. We need an investment around that. The laws already permit for this, but we need things to be bolstered, and we need our headspace to be going in that direction. Like I said, Greg, this is just about priorities here. Phasing out the drug injection sites, they're not talking about treatment at those facilities. Someone comes, they do the hard drugs, and they say, okay, go on your merry way. There's no conversation where you say, well, hold on a second, sir. We maybe get you into treatment. It's about changing our attitude here. And everyone I talk to, all walks of life, they want to see us go in a different direction, Greg, because we love this city. We love it for our families, but we see it going a bit more towards Vancouver, Seattle, San Francisco. And I'm not going to let that happen. Not one step further, sir.
I wonder where that sort of crossing the Rubicon moment was, where that was deemed to be, like what you said, was deemed to be insensitive instead of compassionate and trying to help people. We'd all go to the wall. I said this so much during COVID. You probably couldn't relate. Our job is to push our kid out of the way of a moving car and take the impact ourselves. That's our kids. We should do that for our kids. So we should be doing anything and everything for other people's kids who may not have parents advocating for them, who may have one or zero parents on their side by this point because they were addicts or they stole or they did this or they did that. And we're not, there's people that aren't the parents you and I are out. There's people that don't have the parents you and I had or that we are to our own kids right now. And I'm sorry, advocating for them to just to keep on keeping on with these problems is not compassion to me. It's not. It's an emotional issue.
Absolutely. And we got to stand up for regular folks, Greg. And it's about parks or for families, phasing out the drug sites. I'll bring in 500 more uniformed officers, a pro-business environment, dealing with this bike lane insanity, respecting the suburbs again, Etobicoke, Scarborough, North York. You can learn more at fury.ca, F-U-R-E-Y.ca.
Okay, we'll do another visit. Thank Anthony you, Fury, I want your vote on June 26th.
This is Toronto Today with Greg Brady.
Toronto's news, today's talk.
640 Toronto.
We talked about this awful scenario with the dog bite of a teenage boy who's going to need cosmetic surgery for his face. We talked even to the listeners yesterday. We've all had a moment with a dog off a leash, but this is problematic, and certainly on school grounds. It wasn't during school hours, but Toronto City Councillor for Ward 9 Davenport was very quick to be aggressive in making statements about this and trying to make sure it doesn't happen again. There's nothing we can do about the fact it happened, but we can prevent future you know, no other way to put it, dog attacks like this. Alejandro Bravo is that city councilor, and she's back with us on Toronto Today. It's great to have you back on. I know how important this is also. I also know how you must have felt. Your heart probably sank when you heard about the details of this. It's a terrible story for the family.
Greg, this is truly, truly terrifying, sad. I spoke directly to this boy's grandmother, and I know what they're going through is going to change their lives. And this is something that is unacceptable. We were on this working with the school trustee, meeting with the parent council and with the principal a few weeks ago, because the situation, the confrontation on school grounds between children who want to freely play even during the school day, in the evening, whenever, and people who are just irresponsibly bringing their dogs and letting them off leash. So this was before this tragic incident, but one time a child feels threatened by a dog is too much.
Yeah, this
a child gets bitten, which happened over the weekend again, is too much. But this incident, we really have to clamp down in the city of Toronto.
This is Rawlinson Community School. It's near St. Clair Avenue West and Oakwood Avenue. And it happened Friday night, did it, Alejandro?
Yeah, it was around 6:30 p.m. The boy, after school, was playing. He lives in the neighborhood. I know this school well. My children were there from 2000 until my youngest graduated. He's now in grade 12, opposed to grade 8. So it's a really big age range. This is my home school, and one of the challenges here is that there really is nowhere else to go. This is the old city of York, and there aren't a lot of parks here, but there's not a lot of places for the growing dog population of dog owners to take their dogs. But it's clear, like Toronto District school board policy is there are to be no dogs on school property. The school understands that there's nowhere else to go. They're just asking dog owners to keep the dog on leash. So this, the child required surgery. He's in recovery, and we just hope that he makes a full recovery at the best he can.
I think everybody listening to our conversation, Alejandro, probably can relate to this in some way. My kids are older now, but the whole story brought back to me that was one of the things I was most nervous about when kids were like 9 years old, 8 years old. And I shouldn't worry about it less, really, because they're 15 and 17. Adults get bit by dogs off leash sometimes if they make an aggressive move towards the dog or pretend to jump at the dog. Some of it's the owner just not being around, or just it can happen to anybody at any time, which is why there's probably a uniform policy here. It's not about age or about the breed of the dog or anything. It's not that specific.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can't tell me, oh, my dog, will come back when I call them, or my dog is little. You just have to have like draw a line here. There are more people in the city. Yes, there are more dogs than ever. Some families have more than one dog. But the problem is that these are children on the school ground, or whether it's in a park, and if it's not an off-leash dog area, it's really crucial that people leash their dogs. We have a small dog who's really nervous around other dogs. We walk that dog on a leash. Because we don't want him to run at anyone, or it's a courtesy. It's a common kind of the rules of engagement in a city. And oftentimes there are off-leash dogs that run up to us. There incidents occur, but it's like the situation that we're really just compromising the freedom of children to be able to run around on a playground. That to me is like an indication of the extent of the problem. And in this community, it's the most like park deficient in the whole city. So we have the fewest numbers of parks and green spaces to begin with. There's a close by park at Dufferin and Eglinton, and that park is the staging area for a massive amount of construction because of flooding in the neighborhood. So we're getting the double pressure of people coming who can't use that park onto this one school ground. And it is like the school ground is like the heart of the community. We worked, I started working 20 years ago with parents to try to get improvements to that park, and they finally have come through after my son graduated, my third child graduated. I want that place to be a place where people can congregate, but we can't make that happen if dog owners don't keep their dogs on a leash.
Alejandra Bravo, our guest on Toronto Today. I want to give you a couple minutes here. I've got two left on transit. Obviously, it just feels like scenarios are getting more difficult, less buses on time, less options for people that don't have the car as an option. I don't. What are your constituents telling you? They see all these headlines about the Eglinton Crosstown, and regardless of how many times they'd utilize it, I think it's just a microcosm of how frustrating it is to make transit a priority and to build transit properly in this city.
Yeah, we've got the Eglinton Crosstown. We were promised, hey, we'll do this public-private partnership. It's supposed to be done. Yeah, it'll be more expensive. It'll take longer, and it has to be done in secret, but don't worry. It's going to be delivered on time and on budget. It's failed on both of those. So that's a really big problem, because that's how those public-private partnerships is how, the Ontario line is being proposed and all the transit expansion. But, in my ward here, Dufferin is one of the most popular bus routes in North America, and the frequency was cut. We're dealing with, people can't fit on the sidewalk while they're waiting for the bus. And I ride that bus, too, so I get it. I've got three other bus routes that have been cut. This isn't safety. It's not climate action. It's not fair to workers and students and people trying to get around the city to cut bus service, to cut subway service. And we're all dealing with that. It contributes to gridlock. And at the same time, we're paying more in fare. So just listen to the transit users, listen to the transit workers. And I think as a city, we need to follow all of the strategies that we've announced, like a climate strategy, and just do it and refund that, because it's absolutely essential. It's the spine of the city.
Yeah, it means everything. It absolutely makes it work, or it makes it doesn't. And as transit goes, so might the city. So that's concerning. Let's have more conversations about it. I want to hear who you're listening to among the mayoral candidates when we have more time, Alejandra. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Greg, and for caring so much about this community, especially that young boy. Take care.
100%. And yeah, we want to get updates on how the family is doing as we move along here. Alejandra Bravo, Toronto City Councillor for Ward 9, Davenport.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.